I don't know if any of you subscribe to this Lion's Roar magazine. This is a September issue, and it's actually got a lot of articles on breath and breathing. And one of the articles, I've kind of summarized, elaborated on, in some ways, added my own input as well. And the article was by Andrew Olinsky, who's a Dharma teacher. I think he's been more known in the the East Coast on IMS more than the most. So he's not one of the most popular ones, but he's written a lot and been around for a long time. And so his article was entitled "Discovering Reality: Through the Practice of Vipassana," and I'm calling it "What is Meditation Anyway, and Why is It Considered a Good Thing to Do?" He begins in the article about reminding us that the idea of meditation began many centuries before the Buddha in India. And the Buddha was taught concentration practice or calming practices by other teachers. And that is what we really are beginning to do when we're instructed to follow the breath. When the mind has wandered from the object of attention, you know, the whole idea of concentration following the breath was very basic and probably is in all forms of meditation. What the Buddha continued to teach above the forms of that mental training of concentration was the emphasis that the Buddha put on insight meditation or vipassana, which literally means seeing into. Insight meditation or vipassana cultivates the mental quality we know as mindfulness, which means the ability to investigate or observe the flow of changing experience in the mind and the body with increasing clarity and non-attachment. So the aim of the concentration practice, the first part of it, is to calm and unify and steady the body and the mind. And that's needed for us to go farther. So the concentration part is probably in every form of meditation. The aim of the insight practice part of it, the insight that the Buddha added, is to accurately see the nature of what's happening inside us and around us so as to gain a sort of wisdom to help bring an end to suffering. So it's going beyond just quieting the mind, going beyond just quieting the body, although that is needed and necessary for us to get to the next place of what we're calling the mindfulness or the insight practice. And why I want to kind of break this apart and work with it a little bit is I think too often we just say, oh yeah, okay, I meditated today. I sat for 10 minutes or 15 minutes and I breathed and I concentrated and I felt better. And that's important. That's how we start. But there's so much more to this that can enhance and enrich our lives for ourselves and others when we are aware of how it evolves into the next layers and steps. So that's why I kind of wanted to focus on some of the things that are simple, but a little more complex than we seem to realize much of the time. So some of the rest of the comments now that he summarized are taken from the Sutta or teachings of the Buddha on the Discourse on Establishing Mindfulness. How is one to observe or watch what is naturally occurring in the four different aspects of our experience? And the four different aspects of the experience that are mentioned here are, number one, the sensations in the body, which is always the very first, being mindful and aware of what's going on in our body. Secondly, the range of feeling tones from pleasant to neutral to painful. Third, the presence or absence of the emotional states that come up in our conscious awareness. And then the fourth, is the specific set of mental phenomena that come and go in the mind, better known as thoughts. So the way to watch or observe these parts of ourselves, these four parts that come up in meditation, involves three qualities of attention. So the first involves a certain amount of deliberate intention and focused energy, a deep commitment to being present and conscious in each moment, and to stay with it even when it feels difficult or challenging. And it might be helpful to have a little bit of an example here. So what came to my mind was a situation I have with some of my family members that, you know, I feel kind of shut off from my brothers, who are so conservative and so much in their own little world and so close to my world. And so if I'm going to sit with that in meditation, there has to be a deliberate intention to stay with it, because staying with that sense is not comfortable. You know, it's like you just kind of want to say, well, what can I do about it? I've done everything I can. And, you know, want to blow it off and not stay with it. So I discovered that in staying with that, the second quality of this, besides staying with it, the second quality of attention is of the full or complete awareness. That's meaning to look at things very closely, one thing at a time, without trying to split your attention with comparisons and stories and past and future. So to sit with that and not go off into why I think they're doing that or why I think my way of looking at it is better, to sit with it more directly, what happened for me with that was I realized that I don't like the fact that they are where they are politically and what the way they look at things, even morally sometimes, even though they're good Catholics, you know, in quotes. But what really was underneath some of that is like not feeling a connection to them, missing that bonding, because we can't seem to put those things aside. And I feel the energy of negativity, you know, in their presence and even on phone calls in relation to that. So it was more than just wanting to collude on ideas. It was that feeling of not being connected. And so the third quality in observing these things is an attitude of equanimity towards the phenomena that's coming up, rising and falling. So not clinging to what you like about it and not pushing away what you don't like about it. To be able to observe it and see it as it is and then stay neutral. The example is given is like a judge on a trial or a referee in a game. So to stay in that frame of mind, and when you can stay there, you can have compassion for yourself, compassion for them, and you can, you know, move beyond the stuckness. So the qualities again are a deliberate intention to be with whatever's coming up and to stay with it even if it doesn't feel good or you don't like it. And the second is to have complete awareness with what's coming up and see what happens. And I think this is the place where Tara talks about that unlayering, you know, with the rain. What's underneath? What's happening here? And to allow those things to come up without analyzing, and then to get to that place of being equanimous with it and to be able to sit with it and be with it and then see what happens. And this is not an easy thing to do. I mean, this takes practice, and the things I'm talking about here tonight are like steps that you move slowly through, and we fall back and we, you know, trip over ourselves. And I think the most important thing is to stay mindfully present to ourselves with compassion, because a lot of things are going to get in the way, and I'll address that in a moment. So our mindfulness meditation practice is designed to help us counter the habit of drawing things we like closer and pushing away what we dislike. In other words, clinging to what we like and, you know, pushing away what we don't like, which is normal. And so balancing with this is so important to help us avoid obsessing about worldly affairs and our problems in general. So when we choose to sit, we choose to sit and set aside the concerns of everyday life, not because we don't care, but because we kind of have to set that aside so we can be more present to what's truly deeply going on. So Vipassana meditation does not involve, and this is a tricky one for those of us that like to be in our heads a lot, Vipassana meditation does not involve thinking through or pondering over problems. It's just the opposite. Giving thoughts a rest so intention can be focused fully on seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, feeling. And then I added on there, getting underneath our reactivity. So what is the actual practice? The first thing we are asked to do is breathe in and out mindfully, meaning being aware of the micro sensations that always accompany breath, which is why I did what I did with the breathing today. Until I started reading about this, I've never gone that slowly to really be mindful of those micro sensations of the breath. It's quite amazing to see that flow and what's really going on with every breath we take. This means to feel fully and completely the ever-changing sensations of the entire body of the breath from start to finish and then back again, in a steady rhythm. Then we invite the body to calm its activities and allow breathing to become tranquil and at ease. And when we can do that, then we can allow these other things to kind of start bubbling up. But what happens if we don't know about this process, when those things start bubbling up, we don't want to look at them or see them. We want to push them down, and that's the natural pushing away tendency that is human. The attitude of equanimous awareness can then be expanded beyond the breath to the sensations of the body when sitting, standing, walking, etc., and even further to the many common movements such as eating, drinking, and even going to the bathroom. So sometimes it maybe doesn't make sense that we should be so attentive to those little intricacies of the breath or the body sensations, but it's all training so we can be more mindful of that in all our everyday activities. Even going to the bathroom, even, you know, peeling an onion, no matter what we're doing. And then it goes even further. One can practice observing the feeling tones of pleasure, pain, and pain that are part of every moment of our experience. It's challenging to do this because of our deep-seated reflexes to enjoy pleasure and reject pain. But it's sort of like you don't start in college, you start in kindergarten. And kindergarten, or toddler stage, is where we start with just learning about our breath. That's the beginning. Learning to feel the body, learning to be aware of those intricacies. You can't just jump ahead and expect to start having all these insights and unlayering things. You need to start with the basics. And so what I'm trying to be careful of here is that those of you who have high expectations on yourself don't start criticizing, well, I'm not there yet, and I've been meditating 3 years or 5 years or 10 years, and how come I've never done this or known this? It doesn't matter. It's wherever you are is where you are, and that's what's important, is to acknowledge that and to learn and grow in ways that are right for you at this time. The benefit of this meditation training is to be able to be mindful of pain, pleasure, pain and pleasure without getting captured by it, and especially with pain of trying to escape it. You also will discover that this is interesting. Most of the feeling tones we experience as you get more connected to doing this are neither pleasant nor painful, but fall into the neutral category. So our practice is to merely notice with objectivity. That in itself, I think, is important to note. When, you know, the negative seems to stand out, and when we think everything is so negative, think of the positive and then think of all the neutral. So much of our life, you know, is not neither black or white, it's right in the middle. So focusing on some of this helps reveal things like as they really are rather than as we think they are. So what's the benefit of all this? Wisdom. Gradually we gain insight into just how impermanent, unstable, and impersonal everything is. In sitting, we notice a parade of sensations and feeling tones arising and fading away in our experiences. We really begin to experience the passing of all of this. So eventually, this meditation practice opens us to view the episodic and constructed nature of ordinary experience. Then this really then goes on to expose us to the core Buddhist deconstruction of conventional reality, which is saying that most of how we see things or think the way things are is quite often not that case at all, and it's really pretty different. And the bottom line is none of it ever lasts. Beneath everything, at the level of experience, there are only verbs, V-E-R-B-S, verbs, a constant flow of events coming and going. That can be disconcerting, but it can also be liberating depending on how we look at it. What props us up may not be as substantial as we thought, but neither is that which causes us suffering. So the positive things are not going to be as lasting and strong as we think they are, but then the negative things aren't going to be as bad and lasting as we think they are either. So this can provide a frame for a spirit of freedom, a sense of freedom. As one continues with this practice of mindful exploration, we shift from physical sensations and feeling tones to the more subtle realms of emotional and mental life, which are the insights into the nature of our experience as they become more pronounced. Eventually, we see that yearning and anger and confusion and all the rest are recognized to be just permutations of the mind that we can identify with emotions, and then we're bounced around by them, and this causes a lot of our suffering. And I want to make a little side note about that. Because this all sounds doable and good, but underneath some of those layers can be some trauma and deep inner wounding that started very, very young. And those impacts can be there for us, and they need to be looked at to really be able to have this equanimous way of looking at all these things. And so that has to be dealt with, and if it can't be dealt with in the meditation, then it's a sign that you need to get some professional help with dealing with some of those deep layers of woundedness instead of be frustrated and why can't I do this and why does it always feel like I'm going down deeper and deeper and not coming up better. And I mean, if you're having chronic issues around that, then maybe it means that there's some areas that you need some, you can't do it all by yourself. So I'm not meaning to sit here and say, this is all 1, 2, 3, have the formula and it's gonna work. You gotta be ready for these things and approach it in a way that works for you and get outside help if you need it. So with mindfulness, we can see that this is impermanent, that everything is impermanent. Fabrications of cause and effect, we can learn to steer clear of that and not get hooked. When we are able to get through these layers and let go of the reactivity, We begin to use our increasing wisdom to steer a meaningful course through the terrain of our experience rather than be flailed around in our minds as a victim of these unhealthy impulses. So when you feel like you're the victim of these unhealthy impulses and you can't seem to get free of them, maybe you do need some help with it. Many of these experiences can be helpful for our growth and understanding, while some are can be obstructive and harmful. The wisdom acquired through this practice helps us to know the difference. The insights that come with meditation open a door to seeing things as they actually are. We are causes of our suffering. We see that the causes of our suffering are not the external events we encounter, but our internal, physical, mental, emotional responses to those events. When we try to hold on to things and keep them from changing, or try to reject inevitable difficulties we inquire, the result is suffering. Gazing upon the natural rising and passing away of events, we, quote, abide without clinging to anything whatsoever in the world. That's from the Sutta. So I invite you to commit to your practice with love and compassion for yourself and the world as you journey the path of potential peace and freedom. Namaste. So now we open when you're ready for comments, contributions, responses, thoughts.